Let's go! Come on, everybody, and let's get to bumping, cause it's thrill, play the time. Baby, Rip City's jumping now.
Keep Brindle up the middle.
Hit! Oh,
come on, everybody. All right, everybody, welcome to the 381st edition of the Holy Backboard Podcast. I am Dustin here in sunny Rip City, and I got my man.
Man, I'm kind of jealous. I'm not wearing a baseball hat, too. You rocking the Blue Jays hat. But, yeah, I'm ready to talk about what happened with March Madness in this last week. Before we started recording, I was like, damn, the going from 64 to 4 is, like, pretty incredible for, like, basically 7 days. So, you know, it's really one of the most fun times of the year. And you know, there are draft guys in these teams that have won and lost. So we're here Monday after the Madness to talk about it.
Yeah, let's kick it off with my favorite prospect at the moment, and a prospect that I think really helped increase his stock significantly. And that's Tennessee's Dalton Connect. And he had an absolute monster second weekend in the tournament. You're looking at a player who went up against Creighton, a very good veteran-laden Creighton team, scored 26 points. Yes, it was on 8 of 21 shooting, but 3 of 7 from downtown, got to the line 8 times, converted 7 times, chipped in with 6 boards and 5 assists, and no turnovers in 38 minutes, which is incredible. And then he had one of the best performances of the tournament, going head-to-head with Zach Edey. 37 points, 14 of 31 from the field, 6 of 12 from downtown, 3 rebounds and assist. Again, only 3 turnovers in 37 minutes of action. So you're looking at a high usage player committing only 3 turnovers in 75 minutes of basketball, high leverage basketball. That was pretty incredible. And what I loved about Connect's weekend was he kind of showed how he can be used in a variety of ways. Like, you watch the Creighton tape, and there's a reason he was 8 of 21. They were basically face guarding him the entire first half with Baylor Shireman, daring any other player on Tennessee to beat them. And then they
had Cockbrenner behind Shireman too. That's like face guarding was one thing, like, but like their entire
the announcers defense had no idea what they're like. Is it a box in one? It is a triangle in two. Like, they were. Greg McDermott, Creighton's coach, was throwing out so many defenses to stop him. And there were certainly some NBA type shots. There were specifically in the second half, he gets the ball on the strong side near the bench, and they set a screen for him. And there is the Kalkbrenner is back there. He doesn't get up quick enough, and he's shooting an NBA three. Like, we're talking the type of defense that Damian Lillard saw against the Pelicans in the 2018 playoffs. Like, they were pressed up on him, but they weren't enough. And he walked into a dribble up three. Like, he gets the ball in transition. He's able to show that he can score as the guy. I don't think that's his role at the next level, but it was nice to see him still rise to that challenge and impact the game in other ways when his shot wasn't falling. But the Purdue game was elite tape for scouts to say, I'm a number three option at the next level. He was just running off some beautiful curls, just finding his spots, catching and shooting in transition, spotting up, finishing at the rim. It was gorgeous basketball. He just catches fire. Like, it's incredible to watch him play. And the more I hear of these experts and analysts, like, it's positive. It's like, oh no, he's my 15th rated prospect. He's my 17th rated prospect. I just kind of want to say, tell me who you think is better and why. Because if you go back to 2020, this is Desmond Bane all over again. And Desmond Bane did not have the tournament run at TCU that Dalton Connect had at Tennessee. And Sage, if you were high on Desmond, if you go back and do a redraft in 2020, he's going top 5, period.
And the most impressive thing to me with Dalton is, I would say Jared McCain is the number 2 prospect right now in the draft cycle of all the players that have played in the last weekend. But Jared had flip other shooting guards. Dalton's doing this with no other NBA quality first round pick on his team. And he's playing so well and put up 40 points against Purdue in that Sunday game. It's really impressive how he can just generate buckets and do it in a way where it's impressive because it's multifaceted. Like, Jared McCain's just going to shoot threes, relocate, shoot threes, maybe float it a few times. But Dalton gave you the entire Rolodex of ways that he can score. So, I mean, if people are going to use the age as a factor and the lack of defense as a factor, we probably shouldn't be listening to him that much, to be honest. Like, I want to play a game. Like, who do you think is the draft analyst that, like, the Mel Kiper of the NBA?
Probably Jonathan Givony from Draft Express, who now moved over to ESPN.
I want to play a game where, like, I find all the prospects, notes of all of the players, and then I want to make you guess who it actually is. Because sometimes draft analysts don't know, and they have preconceived notions about a player. Dalton is going to be in the league for a very long time, and there's some players in the top of the draft that you really can't say that. Like, Matas, Ron, like, there is a lot of really scary bottoms for all of these dudes, where Dalton, it's a pretty safe floor and middle ground. And if he hits the ceiling, you're talking about one of the most explosive scorers in the league. So he's been awesome.
This tournament run, he played 35 minutes a night, giving you 26 points, 40% from downtown on nearly 8 attempts. So great volume, great percentage. Getting to the line 6 times, knocking down 83%, grabbing 6.5 rebounds, 2 assists, and again, just 2 turnovers in such high usage. It was just really easy to envision him in this offense with any coach, with Scoot, Shaden, like that we talked about so often. Can this prospect fit with the two blue chip pieces that we have? Absolutely, with Dalton Connect. Yeah, and what I like about him is, yes, he's 23. That's fine. But he has grown from community college to Northern Colorado to now being the SEC Player of the Year and a consensus first-team All-American. Like, there's clearly more that he can tap into, and he looks like a professional scorer. He looks like a player who processes the game. He looks like a player with, you know, who possesses a high intelligence for what he's doing out there, and he doesn't get sped up. Like, even on misses, like, he's not missing left or right. It's just short or long. Like, he's going to get better looks when he doesn't get the attention that other players do. Like, no, he does not have an Anthony Edwards ceiling. Nobody is claiming that. And I think that's a big thing when you're looking at prospects. Not everyone's ceiling is the same, right? There is no Chet Holmgren in this class where, you know, you can see, okay, there's the potential, but I also see the production and the flashes of brilliance. You kind of maybe put together whatever equation or algorithm and say, okay, that's what I'm going to calculate their ceiling as. There's that Matas, Ron Holland, Alex Starr, they don't have that type of ceiling. There isn't that ultimate ceiling guy in this draft. But Dalton Connect has a higher ceiling. Yeah, Dalton Connect has a higher ceiling than I think he's given credit for. He has a tailor-made role for the NBA. There are skills that translate to the NBA. And it was so enjoyable to watch him play basketball.
And I think all of his skills translate easy and efficiently. There's nothing that, like, you have to squint your eyes to see. Remember when we were talking about Cam Whitmore? We had to squint our eyes to see the ceiling. I mean, you and I both wear glasses, so obviously our eyesight isn't great, but, like, I can look at what Dalton Connect is and see, like, okay, there have been many players like him that have a 6'6", that are snipers and can do other things when the closeout happens and he can score. And I think that with the NBA going to more zone, I think Dalton Connect is a complete and utter zone buster with his skill set shooting the basketball. Like, there's things that he can do to a zone that is just devious.
And with the Blazers having 2 picks, you know, you could potentially pick up Dalton Connect, and you could potentially pick up one of these next two bigs that we'll be talking about with the Golden State pick, because you're going to want some brick walls out there setting some screens, and both of these players do that really well. Let's start with my favorite of the prospects, that is Purdue's Zach Edey. I don't think anybody has maybe helped his stock more in the postseason than Zach Edey, especially after splitting time with Travion Williams 2 years ago, losing as a two seed in the first round, becoming the player of the year, but not getting your team out of the first round, becoming only the second one seed to lose to a 16 seed. And now he's going to the Final Four, and he has just put up a gargantuan, Herculean performance. You look at Friday against Gonzaga, 27 and 14, gets to the line 10 times, converts 7, 10 of 15 overall in 38 minutes. The Tennessee tape was absolutely unreal. 39 minutes, he sat for like 23 seconds. 40 points, 16 boards, 13 of 21 from the field with dudes draped all over him. 14 of 22 at the line. One assist, one steal, one block. Again, five total turnovers in damn near 80 minutes of action. Very smart with the basketball. What I thought he showed is condition, soft hands, shooting touch, durability. He has only missed one game his entire career. That was 2 years ago. That was with an illness. Again, he is not going to be asked to be playing 40 minutes in the NBA. He's not going to ask to be the number one option in the NBA, but he's capable of doing it at this level in this high leverage situation. The conditioning is so underestimated, in my opinion. We're talking about a 7'4", 300-pound man that is able to go up and down the court. He probably ran 4, 5, 6 miles against Tennessee, and he was still able to go to the line. And to have a free throw shooter that you can depend on, like I think people are forget like it hasn't happened in a while because big men have become better free throw shooters. But Dwight Howard, DeAndre Jordan, even Shaquille O'Neal to an extent were not playable down the stretch because they couldn't hit free throws. Portland essentially won a series against Houston because Terry Stotts enacted the hack of Dwight in game one. That completely turned everything around in that series. You can't do that with Zach Edey. He's got soft touch. There's two things I want to mention, a positive and a negative. Let's start with the positive. He's only registered 7 blocks this tournament so far, but a lot of it's because dudes just, they reroute their shot or they go elsewhere. Yeah, he's 7'4 with like a damn near 9 foot standing reach. I mean, you saw him cutting the net at the end of the Tennessee game as they go to the Final Four, and he's doing it without a ladder. Like, it's just, it's mind blowing how massive he is. So don't just look at the stats and be like, oh, he only has 7 blocks in 4 games. No, they're just not even trying him. The one area that I think that he needs to work on for him to reach his ceiling is he loves going over that left shoulder to shoot that right-handed hook. He needs to become a little more ambidextrous and go over his right shoulder as well. Tennessee was starting to sit on that. That's how he got his shot blocked a couple of times. He did throw an up and under towards the end of the game, which definitely caught Tennessee off guard. So, you know, if he can just work on using either hand, like we're talking about a player who could have a shot that might be the most dominant thing we've seen probably maybe since the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar skyhook or even the Shaq quick turn post where he did that jump hook as well, because guys that size are, it's almost impossible when they get to their spots, they get their space. You just hope and pray because there's not many people on this earth that can stop that. And do you think the Spurs really want to subject Victor Wembanyama to, you know, 20 minutes of having defend against a 300-pound, you know, paint beast? No,
that's why Zach Collins is there.
Exactly. And he's going to eat Zach Collins up. So that's what, like, yes, there are questions about how he could fit defensively.
It has to be a deep drop every time. A
deep drop, and maybe you have your point guard hedge and then return. And
but it works fine with Scoop because he wants to fight over regardless.
But, like, you get that change of pace center. And even if he's a backup, I don't care if you're drafting a backup in the lottery. This draft is unlike others.
This is where I disagree with you a lot. I think that this draft has a lot of top end talent is bad, but I think that there are legitimate rotation and better players than we're going to throw in a change of pace center in at 14. Like, I think there's a lot.
I would take him. I would take him.
That's where I disagree. I would put him in the 20.
Like a 6th, 7th man is part of your rotation, right? Teams play.
I don't think he's going to be a. He is not going to always be your backup center. The context matters with him. You can't put him in some places where he's just absolutely going to get fried defensively.
Then you put him down on the block and you fry the other team. Like, you have to match strength versus.
But threes mean more than twos. And
old basketball, or not old, but like a few years ago, yes. But size is coming back. Like, small ball is like the NBA is cyclical. And yeah, if a team gets hot from three, you're going to have to take him out. But we're talking about. You need pieces to win in the postseason. Games slow down in the postseason. Purdue wants to play a half-court pace. Tennessee wanted to get them up and running. Like, I've seen enough early 90s Blazers basketball to know that's how they wanted to play as well, and it didn't work out. They couldn't operate as well in the half-court. Playoff basketball for decades has been half-court, slow it, grind it out. You maximize your possessions. You need a body to go and dump it into, run, set some screens. Like, he's going to slow the game down. So, like, he may not be a regular season guy in terms of every night. I will agree with you there. But I'm looking for players that you can lean on in the postseason to really, like, nobody's going to have an answer for this guy. And I think, like Dalton, he's another player who's continuously grew, each and every year. He's added more to his game. We saw him hit threes at the combine. I don't think it's out of the realm for him to insert some pick and pop to his game. I'm just, I think he's.
Is he in your top 10?
Easily. Yeah.
Okay. See, he's in my tier 3 because he isn't an everyday player. We're talking about one of the best throw him in change of pace backs.
His mobility has improved. Like, watching
sure,
him.
Sure. But there's still limitations on his mobility because he is 7'4", 300 pounds.
And he's also going to be able to give you more on the defensive end at the NBA level because he's not being asked to play 40 minutes and basically be the entire Purdue offense. Like, everything ran through Edie. And he's either having to fight for post position, toss it back out, repost, or he's, you know, just a decoy. Like, every ounce of energy went into defending Zach Edey from a defensive perspective. That's not going to be the case. So I think he can give you more. He can play in more bursts. Let's flip and look at the UConn big, which we could see a showdown. I'm really hoping both Purdue and Connecticut.
Yeah, the 7-4 showdown.
So next week we get kind of a battle of the Titans, a much different type of center. He's only had to play 23 minutes total or on average this postseason. Played 23 minutes against San Diego State. 8 points, only 9 shot attempts, 8 rebounds, 1 block. Against Illinois, 22-10 in 22 minutes, 9 of 13 from the field, 4 of 8 from the foul line, 4 of 9 total on the weekend, 5 blocks, 3 steals. Really shut down the interior for that Illinois team.
And that's their entire offense, is basically get to the rim by any means necessary. They had Terrence Shannon. They had all of those players are not shooters. They're slashers. And it kind of was, I was texting you, this is like the perfect Donovan Clingan game. All he has to do is be in the drop coverage and just contest. And he was fantastic at it. But like, there's not going to be that many NBA teams that have 5 slashers on the floor going after him every time.
There was a possession against Illinois where there was a 3-point shooter in the corner and he busted his ass to get out there, but it was the easiest pump fake. And you saw this big burling semi try to slow down and he just couldn't. And the guy went right by him. So he's going to have to work on his closeouts. I don't think what we saw in terms of the offense is translatable. I think he's only a lob threat at this moment. Like, if you caught the YouTube version of the JJ Redick LeBron Mind the Game podcast, they talked about college players kind of doing this. They duck their shoulder down to touch their cheek and kind of throw it over their head. Donovan,
that's a little bit of Donovan.
That's his go-to. So right now, I think he's Joel Prisbilla. And that kind of scares me. I want to like him. I see the rim presence. I see the rim protection. I worry about the foot injury. I worry about, like, we're talking about Zach Edey playing 40 minutes. Like, Donovan's playing 20.
And they were so, like, I don't think he's ever played, like, extended minutes, really. Especially with how talented UConn is in general. They don't need him to be that. And I was hoping
he played over 30 minutes three times this season.
Yeah, why would you need to play him more? So I get, like, they're trying to win a chip again. So you don't need to play him extended minutes. But I would love to see it more than... I don't know if I've ever seen those. I don't know the games that he played 30 in. So I never seen the extended minute of Donovan Clingan. So it's like, is he another short burst center? Especially with him putting on weight again. Like, it ruins his ability to move as well as what we saw in his rookie year, or his freshman year. So I want to like him. I just don't. Like, he's a role player, and we're drafting him. People are projecting him like 7 through 13, probably. No, I haven't seen anything where he's dropped to 13.
Some people are projecting him with our pick of 5, and that's too high. That's too high for Edey. I think that's too high for Klingon. Like, if you're picking 5, you need a starter, in my opinion. And there's too many questions. I think Casey Holdall tweeted out, like, why isn't Donovan Clingan being thought of as a number one overall pick, or people aren't talking about it? And that was, you know, I responded, I was like, one, conditioning, injury history. He's a hackable free throw shooter. He doesn't really project to have many skills on the offensive end other than, you know, rim running.
Mm-hmm.
And I think defensively.
How different offensively is he than Christian Coloco?
A name I hadn't heard in a minute, man, and that tells you a bit right there.
But, like, offensively, is he that different than Christian?
He's Joel Prisbilla, and Joel Prisbilla was nothing more than just, oh, catch and dunk. Like, you don't run post-ups for Joel. He's not a pick and pop threat. Prisbilla worked to become a passable free throw shooter, but early on in his time with Portland, could not hit, you know, it was a lot of brick city.
I think it's going to be like a multiple year development cycle for Donovan Clingan to get to a point where he believes that he's 6 or is he 7'3", 7'4", 7'2"?
7'2".
Like,
7'2".
I don't think he believes he's 7'2". I think he thinks he's 6'10". Because he tries to block players when he just needs to put his hands up high, make them score over this gigantic dude. I'm not really... I think Edey's in the 20s. I think Clingan should be in the 20s. I think Flip's one of the worst defensive bigs I've seen. A lot of these center crops that people talk about it being good, I just don't see it. I don't even think Alex Saar is a legitimate center right now. Like, the only one that I think does everything you need is Yves. And that's why I have him at 8 on my board. There's not those centers that can give you everything you need in what centers are today. Edey's to burst. You need to play him in burst. Donovan also needs to be played in burst. Flip doesn't have any physical presence. The center position isn't really that deep, like people try and tell us. At least for me, I don't see any like legitimate center out of the three players that we've talked about with...
I mean, I think people are selling Zach Edey short. I think everything you want is center.
I get it, but I'm not trying to take him with either pick. To be perfectly honest.
He's going to go lottery, and people are just going to have to like it. It's going to happen. It will happen. I think everyone is low on him, but once people get him at the combine, you start seeing how he's moving. The measurables are going to be through. Like, there's really... When you've got freaks like Victor and Chet coming into the league and more are on their way. It's like Pacific Rim and the Kaijus. Like the portal has not closed. There's more coming through the Marina's Trench, and you need your own version of it. And you're not going to be drafted. There's not one that's on the level of Wemby, obviously, but you need some, just, you need your own. And that's the beauty of having two picks in the top 14 as of right now. Is there any other prospect that you wanted to touch on from this weekend, Sage?
Oh, definitely Jared McCain. Like you see the explosion in his shots, and when he becomes hot, he is an absolute flamethrower. I mean, he scored 30 in a game last week where he you just see the shot creation, what he can do. And I think that he is a better defender than some people are putting him at. I see him dig in the post. I think help side, he's really good. Obviously, I hope he's 6'4 instead of 6'2. But I think even if he is a smaller guard, the shot creation and the ability to make threes make it. So he's going to be a first round guy. I think one of the players that confuses me the most is Tyler Kolek. He had an amazing last week. But
Marquette was underwhelming for sure with all of that talent.
Oh yeah. But I feel like I don't know if he's athletic enough to be in the NBA. That's my main concern with him. If he can hit those Malcolm Brogdon athletic points, I think he could be a Malcolm Brogdon, but I'm so confused if he can actually hit it and be somebody that's athletic enough to be on the floor. So what do you think about Tyler Kolek?
Second round guy. And I think you kind of, if you take him in the second round, you hope he has a Goran Dragic, Malcolm Brogdon.
I think that is the ceiling, but he might not even be athletic enough to do that.
He might be Kendall Marshall with the jumper.
Yeah.
You know, Marquette was pretty disappointing. You know, they had also Iguodaro on their squad, and the path was there for them to make it to the Final Four, and they kind of stubbed their toe. Mm. And
yeah, and I realized after we published the last one, we didn't talk about the two hottest cards in McCain and Kolek. Like, those two won them into this weekend, and unfortunately they took the L. Marquette took the L, but I don't know. There's some players like Baylor Shireman that I'm like, if he hits his athletic markers that he just teensy bit like athletic enough to play in this game, I think he could be a multiple year NBA player. You talked to me about a hot take and I didn't get to say it. I think that there are like 45, 50 potential rotation players in this league, in this draft class, and GMs and basketball ops just have to find them and place them in situations. And if they do get placed in positive situations, I think that this could be a really deep class in terms of rotation players. Like, I would say there's 45 dudes that could make it in the league. And there's some years where you don't see that. The top end talent isn't, you know, there is no star. Like, in my list, tier one is really good complementary pieces. I think there's like 45 rotation guys that in the right situation can be
a multiple contract guy. Is there 45 spots open though?
What's up?
Is there 45 spots open though?
No. Well,
maybe if you factor in the two-way contracts.
Yeah, the two-way contracts make it a little bit easier, but like, I think that there is talent in this class. It's just not star. But like, if you're looking for a Bruce Brown player, there's like five potential Bruce Browns. If you're looking for role players, I think this draft class is pretty nice. If you're trying to build around your Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe, it's just, will they get into the right situation and, you know, like, take advantage of it? I don't know, but I think the floor of this draft class is nice and it's interesting.
Yeah, it wouldn't behoove the Blazers for these players to return, but I would personally love it if Cody Williams, Stephen Castle, you know, a few others returned to school and tried to have a sophomore campaign like Ivy did, like Benedict Mathurin did, and really boosted their stock to show what they could do, because those are two players that I think
didn't get a chance really.
No, I think they got plenty of a chance. I don't see the production. Like we talked about having a ceiling, and you need to see more. I need to see more from Cody Williams. And this is my hot take. If Cody Williams didn't have a brother who was breaking out in the NBA right now, I would be much lower on him. So I'm betting on that gene pool more than what I saw from Cody Williams.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, I don't see what you're talking about, bro.
But Jalen Williams, probably his freshman campaign, probably looked a little busted as well.
But Jalen actually had athleticism, where I don't think Cody Williams has that top-end athleticism. Like, I think they're both fundamentally sound players, but having that athleticism makes you being fundamental super deadly. And I don't know, like, Castle is basically like it's flashes of brilliance, and there's some really brilliant moments, but it's not enough to I wouldn't take him with the Blazers pick, but I would take him with the Warriors pick.
There's a high chance I think he has like a Cam Reddish, Nasir Little type of career where he's eaten off of that high school rep, because like he comes in as a distributor, but he's not. The shot needs a lot of work.
Unbelievable.
He doesn't have that explosive athleticism either. Like, he had that great turnaround dunk in the second half against Illinois, but he struggled to just finish in traffic in that first half. So there's a lot of those players in this draft where you have to project that they nick off not one box, not like they got to check off three boxes for you to be like, okay, I feel really good. And there's certain players I like that have to do that as well. But that's another reason why I like Edie and I like Connect. Like, those guys, like, I see roles for them in the NBA. I think the Blazers just need to upgrade their talent in general. And if you have two picks, sure, take an upside swing. But again, I don't know if this draft has that upside swing. So that's where I'm like, I'm at in the evaluation process.
Do you think Arizona was overrated?
They are every year.
Yeah, because PJ Gaul was in tremendous foul trouble and they still lost. So it was like, I mean, Shefflin, and like, it wasn't like, I thought PJ Hall would have to have his imprint in the game for the Clemson to win, but he was in such devastatingly bad foul trouble this entire tournament, and Clemson won. That defense that they did throughout the tournament was incredible, and to see it happen without their one pro was really awesome. Alabama has some absolute dogs on their team. The way that they can just score. Alabama's going to be a tough out in the Final Four.
UConn is going to blow the doors off them. I thought Illinois was going to give UConn a game, and then they went on a 30-0 run. Like,
the coaching staff in UConn is just tremendous.
They are built different. They have so many guys. Like, Tristan Newton should get drafted. It's ridiculous. He's not really on anyone's board. Like, that's a player.
He'd be on mine.
Nobody has him, and it's ridiculous.
He's good.
Best player on the best team.
Yeah.
All right, Sage, that will wrap up Monday After Madness Part 2. We will be back with maybe a Tuesday or Wednesday After Madness, because obviously the Natty is on Monday night, and hopefully we get Connecticut and Purdue. We get to see a showdown between Zachy
600 pounds of beef.
We get another look at Stephen Castle and another look at Tristan Newton for myself, because I'm pretty high on him. Anything else before we wrap it up?
I am going to record an episode on Yves Mises for the podcast, so be on the lookout for that. I think that he is my top center in this class. So I want to do a podcast on him, talk about how he could help the Blazers if the Blazers drafted him. So be on the lookout for that. That'll probably be a Wednesday or Thursday recording. But thank you all for listening. Thank you all for giving all this draft and college basketball content a chance. We appreciate it. We are out of here. Talk to y'all later. Peace.
Wherever you may be, this is Bill Shinley. Good night, everybody.
Let's go! Let's go!